accession number 20456, reel 11.
Brigadier Wilson, reel 11. I was asking you where you actually located your headquarters, 6th Brigade.
Initially in Dimapur itself, and then we moved up I think on the 14th of April, and we took over 5th Brigade. The Japanese had roadblocked 161 Brigade, and it was quite a strong position, and 5th Brigade cleared that and had to clear a place for Division Artillery, a place called Zabza, because there weren't many sort of flat places. And we took over from them and came up alongside 161 Brigade, which was the Indian Brigade that had, with the West Kents, had moved up to Kohima. And eventually we managed to relieve what was left of the ridge, which was just Garrison Hill and there. And our headquarters were on the sort of side of a mountain, a great mountain called Pulabadze, where there was a link road there, where we were responsible for Garrison Hill and the flank protection of the southern flank of the road.
What sort of place did you occupy when you were in Dimapur? Were you in a building?
Oh, they were huts, yes. Huts. Sort of, yeah.
And what about when you went down then to line up beside 161 Brigade?
Holes in the ground.
Holes in the ground?
Yes.
Were these deep holes in the ground or shallow?
No, they were pretty deep, I can tell you. The Japanese had mounted guns and they could shell us. Mm. And so we, they were sort of on the opposite side of the alley to ourselves. What is more, they would send quite strong fighting patrols and, you know, shoot us up at night and things. So one was very much in the front line.
It was a tactical brigade headquarters.
Yes.
How did you dig your own holes in the ground?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Were they individual holes in the ground or?
They started off as individual holes in the ground, then we dug ourselves a sort of a extended monstrous brigade dugout where we had sort of most of our sets and things in there.
How long did it take you to do that, to get yourself set up with a brigade dugout that could provide you with communication centre and so on?
Oh, 24 hours.
Sounds like hard work.
Very hard work. Otherwise life was very unpleasant. You get yourself whizzing about the bloody days.
Were you actually bombarded on your approach to the... to the ridge?
Desolatory, yes. Nothing very serious.
How did the brigade headquarters command control the brigade when you were moving up?
Oh, normal sort of normal wireless procedure. Mm. No problem.
Where was brigade headquarters during the advance? Were you behind the 1st Battalion?
No, we were in front of the 1st Battalion. The 5th Brigade had already gone up the road, followed by Divisional Headquarters.
Yes.
And we then came up with the Royal Barracks following.
Yes.
And there was a short, sharp conference at 161 Brigade Headquarters on Punjab Ridge. Mm. And we took over from there.
How did you do this move? Were you moving in transport?
What?
Were you moving in transport?
Yes.
What sort of vehicles did you have?
Well, the normal Indian Army, 700-weight trucks.
Were you observing the usual road discipline against air attacks and so on?
Yeah.
What sort of rate could you move at? What speed on those tracks?
Well, this was the main road.
Yes.
You could move at perfectly reasonable, what I call military speed. The trouble was, what do you do with transport the other side?
When you get there.
When you got there, and it was like a sort of bloody traffic jam. Mm.
When you say military speed, what sort of...
I mean, you were 25 miles an hour.
Presumably the idea would be to get the transport back beyond sight or range of the enemy artillery.
Well, that was
arrived.
It. That was the problem, because it really was a one-vehicle road. I mean, okay, vehicles could pass each other, but you couldn't have vast convoys, it had to be very carefully controlled.
So you arrived in transport. Was that in daylight or after dark?
No, we arrived in daylight. We had about 4 hours to dig ourselves in and get ourselves organised.
And did the Japanese start shelling you as soon as you arrived and started digging in?
Desultorily, yes. And then they sent a very strong patrol against brigade headquarters that very first night.
What happened? I mean, how did you become aware that the Japanese patrol was in your area?
They appeared, and there was a shooting match.
How close did they get?
Well, very close. Certainly within 150 yards of brigade headquarters.
Was there anything between brigade headquarters and them?
Yes, our defence platoon.
Who was in that?
Well, we had a defence platoon at brigade headquarters made up of soldiers from three battalions, as it were.
Did you normally carry a weapon?
Yes.
What did you normally...
Well, one had a cookery in those days, but that was very...
That's very close defence indeed.
Cutting down wood to light fires. No, in those days, I just had one pistol. That was all.
Did you open fire on this occasion?
No, I kept my bloody hell. There was stuff whizzing around. One had sort of started our brigade bunker, there were wireless sets in there, and so on. And now we relied on our defence platoon. The defence platoon saw them off.
Do you have any idea of how strong the Japanese were on that occasion?
We counted some 20 odd bodies the next morning. Dead. To a young officer whose flag I've got at, in fact, it's in our museum at York.
Do you have any idea of, how far the Japanese were from the defence platoon when they were spotted?
No, I don't. It was fairly thickish country, you see, and we were, as it were, up the side of a mountain. I honestly don't know. They never got through our defence platoon sort of line, anyway.
How was your defence platoon deployed? Were they in individual foxholes?
They were individual foxholes. Mm.
Did you get anything useful in the way of papers or other intelligence material from the dead Japanese?
Oh yes, we did. Yes, they were marvellous. They used to carry their pockets were stuffed with papers and letters home and God knows what. Very strange. Their security in that way was bad.
But you said, on the other hand, that their security in the way of camouflage was excellent.
I know, and yet you see, you've never seen our museum at York, have you? You want to see some of the letters on the postcards that we got from these guys. That's extraordinary. And describing the country, incredible sort of descriptions as to how they loved it, and, beautiful place it was to die.
A consoling thought, perhaps.
Well, there we are. We got an enormous amount of information from them.
Who actually dealt with that? Did you have an intelligence officer?
We had them. We had one. The difficulty was, in those days, there weren't enough Japanese speakers to go around. These are people who read Japanese. They couldn't speak it.
You said that when you arrived, you had a short, sharp conference with headquarters of 161 Brigade. What happened there? Do you remember what the...
Well, that was purely short. This was purely the details of how we were going to take over Garrison Hill and get the wounded away.
Yes. So you were then getting, presumably that was a briefing on what was happening in the area.
Yes, we had to take a particular ridge first before we could really get at Garrison Hill, which the Dolomite Infantry did the next day. Mm.
How did they carry out that attack? Did you see them doing it?
One company went up the side of the hill, supported by artillery, and they winkled the Japanese out, no problem. Sad thing was, they hardly had any casualties at all, except their company commander, who was killed.
Mm-hmm. What sort of Japanese force were they attacking? What was the strength of the enemy?
We don't quite know. They were a sort of outpost, really, from the Japanese main defence line. But I forget, look it up in Louis Allen's book, how many, we killed quite a lot of them, actually.
Of Japanese?
Yes, yes we did.
How was the artillery fire coordinated? Was it direct from Battalion HQ to...
No, normal way, through battalion headquarters, through the battery commander, you know. Mm-hmm. By which time we got the best part, I think, of two field regiments up, plus the Mountain Regiment of 161 Brigade. So, I mean, we always, in the Kohima battle, our artillery, oddly enough, outnumbered the Japanese. The Japanese used their guns much more in a sniping row.
What, a single gun?
A single gun, yes. Very occasionally. Of course, the trouble was they'd captured a lot of our mortars at San Shack. And so they were well supplied with mortars and mortar ammunition.
Were your artillery able to engage in counter-battery fire to neutralise the Japanese?
Well, yes, but you couldn't really find out where the Japanese guns were, you know. When you're dealing with a single, just pairs of guns, it's very difficult.
Did you actually see the Durhams during their attack, or were you...
Yeah, I saw them, yes.
When the company advanced up the hill, what sort of formation were they in?
Well, they were normal spread out formation. You see, the Japanese had not time there to dig themselves proper bunkers. They were trying to get round us, and we caught them. I mean, later on, a week later or something, it was a very different position.
So, I mean, you say spread out. Would this be, what, two platoons forward and one back? Would it?
Well, a normal sort of section formation, you know, yeah. As you would see. So it was, fun enough, it was an open bit of ground that they went over. Well, I like that, of course. It was a question of putting a block in so that we could use the main road,
yes,
with ambulances and things.
Mm. I mean, would the normal formation for such an advance be a file or extended line?
No, they were extended line, rather.
Extended line.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. You're saying that you got the brigade was holding Garrison Hill and a hospital spur.
Yes.
Yes. What sort of positions did you have on these features?
Oh, horrible.
Horrible.
They were every form of hole you can think of. Some dug by the Japanese, some dug by us, some dug by, you know, people who've been, units have been there before. Garrison Hill was an absolute mess.
What was the ground like? Was it earth? Was it rock? Was it a mixture of the two?
It was tolerably easy to dig in, actually. It was all right.
Were you able to make a rational defence plan for Garrison Hill, or was it just a case of...
No, we... Sadly, no, because what was handed over to us was where various units had settled in. See, everyone thinks Garrison Hill was defended just by the West Kents. That's not true. There was bits of their SAM regiment, bits of their SAM rifles. There were odd reinforcements made into platoons. It was all... you took over what there was to take over.
What about the hospital spur? Was that in the same sort of condition?
Yes, except, of course, they had dug this enormous great hole, which they made a sort of advanced dressing station out of, which was defilated from Japanese. Japanese could never get at it.
And your headquarters, was that... I think
that was in a hole in Garrison Hill.
Yes. And that was the advanced headquarters?
Yeah, it was advanced headquarters.
Yeah. How far from rear headquarters was the advanced headquarters at that stage?
As the crow flies, probably 2 miles. As you drove, more like 4. And you've seen the Kohima picture, haven't you? Well, I could show you more or less where I was, but it wasn't really, it doesn't really give you any idea as to the extraordinary sort of steepness of the country.
How did you keep in touch? Did you manage to lay
line? Well, we had line, which was pretty good, and wireless, of course. Wireless at that range was no problem.
Who was actually in the advanced HQ?
Well, they took it in turns. We all took it in turns. Probably 2 nights the brigadier, 2 nights second command, you know, plus staff. So we rotated.
And how many people would there be in there at any one time normally when it was?
Well, you'd have the brigadier, his staff officer, either brigade major or staff captain, sometimes the AQMG, 2 rallying signalers. It was about 10.
Was this dugout in amongst the defensive dugouts, or was it?
No, it was amongst the defensive dugouts.
Mm-hmm. So you were intermingled with the front line?
Entirely. Mm-hmm.
How did you keep in touch with your battalions then? Was that done
by
the
line? Well, they had a wire, you know. If you can imagine, John Grover said that. It reminded him, Garrison Hill was worse in its sort of entirety than the battles he remembered on the Somme. You know, it was such a mess, with bodies all over the place, you know, mixed up Japanese, God knows who.
Was your advance headquarters directly attacked?
Was it?
Directly attacked.
Was it something?
Directly attacked.
Indeed. Grenades and stuff were whizzing around the place, yes. Yes. But my brigadier was wounded later on. That was going up out of Dura. But if you can imagine, it's difficult. You see these people driving off the golf course there.
They're about, what, 300 yards away?
Yeah. Mm. Well, I suppose that if you sort of draw a circle,
yes,
you've got Garrison Hill with two and a half battalions, odds, brigade quarters, all mixed up.
Very crowded.
Sure was. Mm.
How deep was your bunker then?
You could stand up in it.
Did it have overhead cover?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Was it well proofed against artillery fire?
Yes, well, they didn't have very heavy artillery.
They had mainly mountain guns, didn't they?
They were mountain guns, yes. I mean, if they'd been able to use the sort of artillery we used against them, I don't think it would have been proof against much.
How would you spend your time then when you were actually in the bunker on Garrison Hill? What would you be doing?
Well, By day, mostly sleeping, you know, or doing things. By night, standing too, because you never knew when the Japs were going to be on you.
What sort of attacks did they mount?
Oh, they would select one bit of you, one bit of the thing, and just come at you madly, you know, having first tried to draw your fire.
So they try and draw the fire, and then they try and rush.
Then they come screeching at you, yes. Yeah.
Would that happen repeatedly during
yes,
one night?
Yes.
How long were you actually up on the hill then to receive these attacks?
I certainly not as much as most, because there were other things going on.
Well, you were rotating, weren't you?
Well, we were rotating. But I think we had a month of it as a brigade.
What sort of casualties did you suffer as a result of this constant engagement?
I have to go and look up Whatnot's book. I can't remember. The Durham Light Infantry were the worst. They got in a terrible fight with the Japanese. It's in, you've read Men Like These, now. It says, only four officers were left from the 15 in A, C, and D companies. Only 60 men survived from the original 136 in A company. And the carrier, the pioneer and carrier platoons lost also many killed and wounded. The DNI, I think, had more casualties on Garrison Hill than anyone.
Did you manage to get reinforcements and replacements?
No.
Come up?
No, not much.
Did the Japanese manage to make any inroads into the position? Did you have to give ground at all?
No, they were well and truly seen off.
Was that mainly due to your artillery support and mortars?
A lot of it.
A lot of it,
I mean, this was hand-to-hand fighting.
Hand-to-hand fighting.
Absolute hand-to-hand fighting with grenades, yes. Yeah.
Did you have to actually open fire yourself while you were on the Garrison Hill?
Luckily, no.
So you didn't get close enough to headquarters bunker, too?
Well, he did, but I mean, you know, one was glued to a bloody wireless set trying to make sense of things.
Yes. Were you able to follow the course of the battle and to dispose of reserves or take other measures during the Japanese attacks?
Well, no, because you see, it was all in the dark.
Yes.
The only shooting I was at Japanese was by daylight. Mm.
So, I mean, if you were in brigade headquarters and there was a Japanese attack in progress, what could you do in a positive way to help?
Oh, well, I mean, one had grenades, one had things in the bunkers, yes. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there wasn't very much. You see, if you got out of your citadel, you got mown down probably by your own side.
Yes. But so I'm thinking in terms of command decisions. Was there anything you could actually do in a practical sense as a commander once an attack was on?
No, because you didn't know where people were. You could call for artillery fire.
Yes.
Yeah. But anything you do.
Did you have a proper system of DFs laid out then?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. Yes.
When you called up the artillery, roughly how long elapsed between your call and the time on target?
Oh, very quick. Very, very, very quick. They were brilliant.
Did you have any means of illuminating the position at night?
Not really, because, yes, very lights and things, but it was such a mess. And Okay, you illuminate. All you see is sort of figures scurrying around. Whose figures are they?
You couldn't tell friend from enemy.
Beautiful man. What you could tell, fun enough, were the trails of Japanese grenades. They gave off a little sort of purple little flare, rather different from ours. Saw these things sort of coming in the sky, and you realise what they were. Now tell me, do you not think it's 1 o'clock?
What were your logistic arrangements when you were on the Garrison Hill? How did you get food, ammunition, water forward?
The most useful machine we found was a Bren carrier, where you could get it up. Because Garrison Hill road rather went round a cutting, as it were, and then you humped it up by hand, as it were.
Well, you used porterage to get
you couldn't. There was eventually, of course, to get the tank up, there was a track dug up. But basically speaking, you humped it on your back.
Good.
And water, I forget also the RAF rail that parachuted water and ammunition and food to us.
Were they accurate in their airdrop?
Very good.
What was the overall air situation at that time?
Total air superiority, as far as we can say, except twice. The Japanese sent over some Zeros that blast up our gun positions. Mm. Only twice. We were rarely out of range of their, I think, fighter airstrips in there.
Were your Air Force able to give any close support or deal with Japanese artillery?
I mean, they were brilliant Harry bombers. I mean, the accuracy, which they... There was one occasion, one wretched machine did mistake himself a bit, and we saw a dirty red black bomb descending on our headquarters, which sort of went in and didn't explode. Whereupon, Dad John Chapman, my brigadier, did explode down the telephone, and he got the RAF liaison officer, and he said, "Oh, Brigadier, I'm terribly sorry. What a dreadful thing. Did you take his number?"
And had he taken his number?
God, no.
Given the constant pressure which the troops were under from these Japanese attacks, night after night, what do you think it was that kept them going?
Well, I think training and regimental pride, and the fact that you knew that if you let the bastards in, that was probably the end of you.
So would it be right to say it was the will to survival and regimental pride kept the men fighting?
Yeah. And I don't quite know what it was. You see, 2nd Division had been out of the war since 1940. It had this great name, and it was determined that, you know, no one was going to beat it.
How did you handle the wounded? What happened to them?
Well, the wounded, initially, you see, you couldn't evacuate. They were in this dug-in sideways thing on hospital spur. But then we did evacuate them. Once we cleared the road and cleared 502A, we could, with impunity, drive up that side and drive ambulances up. But initially, no, they were crammed together in this strange sort of dugout, which was everything.
How did you personally get to and from the advance headquarters bunker on the hill?
You went in a carrier and then you walked.
You mentioned that a track was cut up the side.
Yes.
Who actually did that? Was that?
Engineers. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get a tank up there, and they bulldozed a tank sort of halfway up. See, if you can imagine it, you had the ridge, then you had the bump, which is Garrison Hill, and then the hospital spur was quite a long affair, and so you had a series of step ladders.